they say one of the best ways to further your career and get more impact in your organizations is by learning from people who have done it before. So people who are further ahead in the things that you want to do. For that, we at Data Futurology put together conferences to bring people together to have the conversations that matter to you with key leaders from around the country. Our next conference is called Ops World. It focuses on building and deploying data products and ML products. This is happening in Melbourne on the 24th and 25th of October. We are having multiple industry use cases of data products and ML products. We have strategies on how to build those. And additionally, we have lots of networking opportunities for you to spend time with CIOs, CDOs, CDAOs who are coming to join us and present. Hope to see you there. Click below for tickets.
I'd like to say a big thank you to our sponsors, Talent Insights. Talent Insights are Australia's leading specialist data recruitment business. With offices in Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane, their experts are providing recruitment strategy and building data teams for clients across industries Australia-wide. They provide recruitment solutions for all roles across the data lifecycle, including data engineering, data science, advanced analytics, customer and marketing insights, business intelligence, data product managers, and data governance. They're skilled at finding the best permanent and contract hires for your business needs, as well as statement of work, project focus, data resources. At Talent Insights, relationships matter most. I can say from first-hand experience, Talent Insights are fantastic to work with. Whether you're a business leader within an HR network or a specialist data candidate, Talent Insights should be the first company you turn to for all your data recruitment needs. Find them at talentinsights.com.au. Hi, this is Felipe Flores. Welcome to Data Futurology. Today, we're going to be talking about applications and how to apply generative AI in the enterprise. We're going to be covering overcoming the barriers that we have. What are some of the architectures that we can build upon? How do we bring in governance? And particularly, I'm excited about to cover use cases. What are these looking like? What are these looking like in the wild? What are people doing right now? So very excited to cover all that. For that, I couldn't have found a better person to speak to about this. We have Grant Case on the show today. He is the regional vice president and head of sales engineering for APJ from Daiku. Grant, always a pleasure to see you, mate. How are you going?
Always a pleasure to see you as well, Felipe. So yeah, fantastic. Doing great.
Mate, too kind. Thank you so much. And so we've had obviously so much interest on generative AI, and there are a number of barriers that enterprises are finding when they're looking to apply it and bring it internally. Could we start there? Could you describe some of those barriers that people are seeing, and then we can start getting into how they are overcoming mm-hmm. those barriers?
Yeah, that's a great start out question. And the first and foremost, I see kind of what we call kind of technical barriers to the use of generative AI, and more of what we refer to as the organizational barriers. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, the technical barriers associated with it. Depending upon your industry, you may have a need to keep data present within your organization versus shipping it out. So first and foremost, if I am an organization that's not in the cloud today, guess what? I got to go buy GPUs. If this large language model thing is interesting to me, if you want to do anything with this stuff at scale, other than playing on your laptop, guess what? You're going to have to go find some A100s or some H100s from NVIDIA. And I hope you've got a good partner in that to go find that hardware for you. That's actually one of the interesting things for me is we were talking to an organization here in the region, and they're like, well, we can't take this stuff off-prem. And it's like, okay, do you have GPUs? No. Well, you need to go find some mm-hmm. in order to make a lot of this work. The second is really from the technical is just the resources necessary in order to make this stuff work. A lot of times it's, you're setting up this sort of infrastructure. Do you have the knowledge and capability to do so, especially if you're in the on-premises world? You want to start making use of Llama 2 or DALL-E 2 or a number of the other large language models out there. You've got to have to run this sort of infrastructure to make it work. The second part of that from a technical perspective is now, okay, the world is your oyster. So we're telling a lot of customers on the, hey, instead of you trying to manage the infrastructure associated with this sort of stuff, go out and, you know, look at the APIs, go look at Cohere and Anthropic and, you know, Vertex AI's Bison, you or Palm 2, you know, OpenAI, Azure OpenAI, go try to look at some of those. But that also becomes questions like, how am I interacting with these things? Am I just giving it to the coders? Am I building applications around it? So it becomes a question of like, how do I get it into, you know, into my organization and not just sitting in an OpenAI chatbot text?
Yeah.
The second part of this is what I've considered much more interesting. And that's the organizational challenges associated with this. And this, to me, there's a whole plethora of these. We see a lot of customer. So you and I both know we're on the kind of the conference circuit. And I asked this question to the audience when I was participating at the last Data Futurology event. You know, shout out to you guys. Great event. If you get a chance, please join Felipe. It's fantastic. Great conference. So one of the keys for I asked this, the audience, like, hey, how are you thinking about, have you put any of this in production? About half the people are starting to do like POCs. They're doing MVPs. But the second part of this is, okay, it worked really well, but now what? So I have to start thinking about a lot of different things, costs being one. So yes, you're using APIs, but you get to understand how costly these things get to be very quickly. Management, am I, you know, what sort of PII am I sending into the cloud? We start to think about things like, you know, toxicity detections, like, are you getting the results back that you're supposed to be doing it? You know, just overall management. You know, there are so many different, you know, I'm thinking like, you know, we did Azure Vertex, OpenAI, the AWS Bedrock, Snowflake's getting into the game, Mosaic ML, it got bought by Databricks. All of this is coming in. And then we've got this whole vector stores components. Like, how do I infrastructure manage all of that? But to me, also, it comes back to, you know, in effect, a lot of auditing, right? What are the questions being asked? And then maybe I want to keep those responses. Maybe I have to keep those responses. Maybe I want to, you know, maybe I want to fine tune my own LLM, content moderation. All of this stuff is, you know, baking in security. Who has access? Those are on the minds of all the CDOs, especially as the CEO has, you know, popped open OpenAI. Probably one of your one or more vendors has come in to show their wares to the, you know, the business team. Now this is all sitting in the CDO, CIO's laps, and they're having to think, okay, what do I do next?
Right. And that's the thing. There's so much interest. There's increasing pressure to move into this space for so many CDOs, CIOs. And then there's these barriers, as you just mentioned. So what would be the easiest way for enterprises to start to adopt it in a way that they are looking forward to productionization, and that they are, you know, trying to improve the truthfulness and the reliability? So what would be kind of the easiest path with longevity that people should consider?
Absolutely. Of course, purchasing Dataiku, that would be great. But I think one of the keys for organizations, as I think about this, is I always come back to, you know, second habit of highly effective people from Stephen Covey. It's begin with the end in mind. If our mind is going to production, we need to be thinking, you know, broadly about all of these different factors and what are the trade-offs associated with this. So the organizations that are doing this well right now, and again, perhaps you know there's a lot of FOMO right now, a lot of fear of missing out of what's going on, what's happening. Good news, most I know probably two or three organizations worldwide right now that we're working with that have anything, what I would consider, quote unquote, in production today at scale. So again, this stuff is very new. So don't feel as though you have to leap into the abyss because your organization is behind. We have a lot of these organizations. I was talking to one, very large, well-known Australian brand here, and their organization has five different businesses. And they have multiple use cases and they're trying to figure out, okay, how do we do this? Well, the first thing to understand is start to plan, right? Think about, think about kind of the surface area and the footprint of what you're trying to do. I'm telling customers right now, best place to start with large language models. Number one, start with your hyperscaler. You're likely, if you're here in Australia, you've already got a cloud, likely have a cloud vendor. If you're somewhere outside of Australia, maybe you have a cloud vendor you have a preference for. You've already spent the time, energy, and effort. Your legal team has spent 6 months writing up, dotting I's and crossing T's. Go leverage that contract, right? Mm-hmm. So use that LLM right there. Start there. The second is start to become sophisticated and understand who are the use cases that we want to apply this to. This is no different, when we talk about, anything related to large AI projects. Let's get a portfolio going. Like, here are the things that we think that could be really high value, high impact, but more technically difficult. But can we start to kind of put all of those into a grid and understand, what are the low hanging fruit? I hate to use that term a lot of times, but again, this is, this is very nascent. If you have an SI or a GSI coming into your organization or consultancy, guess what? They've likely only done this maybe, they might have three or four months worth of engagements. So again, they're not going to be that much more ahead of you, but finding a partner who's kind of done this sort of thing, or at least started to experiment, great way to, continue to leverage someone else as part of this process. Third, who are the people inside of the organization this is going to touch the most? Go talk to your risk folks. Let's go talk to the business itself. Let's try to understand what are the boundaries. Here at Dataiku, we put out what we're calling RAFT, which is in effect our kind of responsibility, thought piece, and kind of methodology in and around this. So as we start to think about these, and you can come to Dataiku or come somewhere else, but think of it, when you're thinking about the social and the responsibility components of this, let's bring that to the forefront of a lot of this. I always say you don't want to sit up on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald because you did something wrong and everybody goes back and looks at you like, why did you do that in the beginning? So thinking about these things ahead of time, again, there are very different technical aspects when it comes to large language models. But again, how we build a project, how we go about surfacing those ideas and those use cases. And there are a ton of these interesting use cases that I'm getting exposed to on a daily basis. But let's think about it. Just do a little bit of planning ahead of time. And use your good judgment. Use the good project methodologies. I know a lot of your listeners probably using an agile type approach. There's nothing wrong with bringing those methodologies in to understand these use cases.
That's great. That is great. I think that there are a lot of good fundamentals that we have in ML products and AI products and developing, deploying those, that we shouldn't throw them out.
No, absolutely not. Right? Absolutely not. I mean, and again, this is one of those where we're starting to hear about the concept of large LLM ops or large language model ops, which is a derivative of ML ops, which is a derivative of model ops, which is a derivative of DevOps, right? So we continue to do these derivatives. The key though is it's pretty consistent. Maybe we're adding a few elements. When we're talking about large language models, we have to think about toxicity and the content that's coming out of it. But we also have to think about maybe a little bit more about hallucination, which is something if you ask anyone, that's the one fear everybody has. And, it continues to happen. Happens to all of us that are using OpenAI, right? Or any other large language model. But again, why not just try to think about this in a much more analogical fashion. And again, the principles that you've been applying don't change really that much. You know, we have a little nuance, but not terribly different from a project management standpoint.
Exactly right. So it's definitely keep leveraging the good fundamentals that we have around
Absolutely.
Products, that because there's a new hype, it doesn't mean that we throw any of that out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then, so I wanted to ask you about the identifying and picking use cases for people to do LLM. So we spoke about some of the considerations, but what are some ways that people can start to prioritize what they can choose, what they can go for, or start to either generate ideas or use of LLMs and then choose which way to go?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So in my role as both the regional vice president for sales engineering, I'm also one of our experts as part of what we call a generative AI expert group inside of Data IQ. And what we're seeing right now is we've seen kind of three patterns begin to emerge. The first one is kind of structure, use cases around structure. Think of this as this is the blocking and tackling of a lot of the NLP use cases we've seen in the past. So things like classification, entity extraction, whereas models, there are a number of models that we've done in the past that have a very good performance. Guess what? LLM blows it all out of the water. In effect, you know, we're releasing in our next release of Data IQ is, you know, we're fundamentally kind of redoing a lot of the NLP to make use of these typical NLP use cases to make use of large language models. The second is what we refer to as more generate. I like generate as I think this is where a lot of the future of large language models is coming from. And it's turning kind of predictive analytics on its head and using predictive analytics with content generation. So let me give you a good example of this. So perhaps I'm a private wealth manager for a number of clients. And my job is we have a new product that the investment bank has put together, and I have a lot of high net worth individuals I should go out and try to prospect with this product. I can start to take some of those machine learning algorithms, things like recommender systems, doing traditional machine learning as part of a process to help me rank a set of customers, take perhaps their information. You know, what are their risk tolerances? What does their portfolio look like? What is their amount of investable income? And give that to a large language model to start generating content for my outreach as part of that. Could be an email, could be a letter, but the individual here has the ability to quickly generate a lot of personalized content for individuals. I think this is where probably the biggest bang for the buck you're going to get in terms of productivity gains for customers and going into the future. The third pattern is what we call answer. And this is probably the one everybody wants right now. I have a bunch of documentation. I have no idea but to deal with it, but I'm trying. Search is very cumbersome. I need to ask questions of those documents and get results. Guess what? Large language models are absolutely the answer for this. But it also become its own little beast, what we're referring to. You'll hear the concept retrieval augmented generation, or RAG. Mm-hmm. So RAG is a methodology by which we can start to build out these sort of data stores so that people can ask these questions and get responses. So really, those are the three main kind of patterns we're seeing. Inside of those patterns, you have everything. I'm seeing an interesting one on Generate that just came across. There is an insurance organization that has people that have to go out and survey. So perhaps you're going into a manufacturing plant, right? But you're an insurance surveyor and you're trying to understand here, I need to understand everything that's going on inside of the plant. But I have a list of questions that I need to answer, not only for my own quoting and my organization's quoting, but what goes to the reinsurance company, right? So yep. I have to make sure that I'm generating the correct content so that it goes out. So that's a, we're looking at this organization to help them with a large language model to do that. Mm. Because again, not every surveyor is of equal important or equal capability in terms of what they're doing. Large language models can help in that. We're starting to see a ton of RAG question or a RAG use cases. One of our customers, LG Chemical, just presented about this at our Everyday AI New York conference last week. This is a health and safety. All of their health and safety, they're making their information available in a health, all their health and safety rules and regulations and books, all available in a RAG to start asking the questions. Guess what? All of that is in Korean. So it's not even in English. And that's the brilliance of a lot of this stuff. It doesn't even have to necessarily be in the language of your or English languages to begin with. You can start to converse. Beyond that, we're starting to things like financial analytics. So how can I start to ask questions of my financials? So this is great for folks that are starting to, you know, how do I start to deal with my numbers? Supply chain optimization, starting to ask questions around the supply chain itself. We're seeing things medical, being able to ask questions in the medical industry, right? So again, the world is your oyster right now when it comes to a lot of these generative AI use cases. There's a ton of them you can start to work with. And it's just kind of use your imagination right now. And a lot, because a lot of your imagination will tell you, hey, these are the things we can go out and we can do. I mean, and if you're thinking about it, if you can think about it right now with LLMs, good chance somebody might already have done something similar or at least starting to think about it. So again, whether you're in marketing, whether you're in finance, whether you're in customer reviews, survey analyses, again, all of this is blowing up right now. And all of it's because large language models are opening the door for it. So a long-winded answer to your question about all of these use cases. But again, all industries, any function, LLMs likely have, some are going to be more important or some better value than others. But gosh, I can't think of any place that won't be impacted by LLMs. Yes.
Right. And I really like the categories that you described around the NLP type use cases, or at least what we used to think about it as NLP that can be done better. The generative ones in terms of how creating customized content. And then the summarize and ask questions and being able to have that interaction when it comes to search. I think they're fantastic ones. So I know you mentioned some of the at least some use cases there. Were there any use cases that we can go into a little bit deeper in terms of how the idea or product came about, their productization, and then what the adoption or uptake has looked like?
Well, again, I think as most of these are, they're POCs and MVPs. So know that a lot of these things, again, they're starting to roll out. We can talk a little bit about the LG Chemical example. This started off as a set of conversations with that organization a couple of months ago. As they started to understand, again, they're looking at the landscape, just like most of your listeners, like, okay, where can we start to apply these? So if we think about that project methodology, we sat down and it's like, here are the potential use cases where we might apply this within our organization. They went through that process of understanding, okay, number one, do we have the data to support it? So that's one of the key differentiators. Do you have the data to support a large language model? Not all of not every problem can be associated with a large language model. I've seen a couple of these. I've already had to, you know, the customers bringing this to us, and not to say that any customer or prospect did this, but they brought, you know, hey, can I help? Can I use this to help underwrite a loan? Guess what? You could probably help yourself. You could classify text. You could put that in a machine learning model, but leave that in the machine learning model. In our typical machine learning model operations, because guess what? You got to start, as you go through this process, people will start to throw all of, you know, let's put LLM anywhere. LLMs are good for a lot of unstructured text, things where we're having to ask questions, where, you know, long documents. Those are the places we want to go with that. So as part of that process, you know, they identified two use cases. The one that made the most sense, that was the most relevant, and had the quickest potential to turn around and generate value, was this health and safety use case. So again, for their organization, being able to ask these questions and get, you know, get appropriate responses very quickly, because the documentation around a health and safety in a manufacturing plant is significant, right? You know, typically you're going to have to go talk to a subject matter expert. But what if that SME isn't there? What if I want to just try to understand, you know, does this rule apply here? That's a great place for large language models. And that's what they saw as part of this process. So they started to develop out this use case of, number one, making use of kind of that third, you know, that third pillar, that answer, by building a retrieval augmented generation. I won't bore everybody with the technicalities behind it, but it's a pretty simple setup at this point. You're taking a set of text, you're encoding it into what's known as a vector store or a vector database. Then you're just querying that just like you would query Google. It's returning a bunch of documents to the large language model that then sets the context with your question and answers it. Very simple in terms of kind of how you put that together. Most of the technology, all of the technologies exist, and, you know, every vendor right now, including ourselves, are trying to make this easier because, again, it's very quick. And the value is they're putting this as part of one of their web apps. So it's just web API calls, so that anybody within their intranet today can start to ask those sorts of questions. There's designs on where we may take this elsewhere. So is it, you know, more mobile apps? But that's one of the benefits of all of this. Most of it's built on APIs. So it's going to slide quite nicely into a lot of the existing application stacks out there today. And again, as you, the audience we saw at the last summit, Data and AI Summit, half the people have already started to mess with this. So I'm bullish right now on a lot of use cases starting to come out, especially in the next year, that will start to hit some sort of scale. I've been doing this for 20 years, both on the client side and on the vendor side, and I have never seen any technology hit it this fast in the enterprise. Most, you know, maybe it would 2 or 3 or 4 years, it might, but in a matter of months, where it's amazing how much, you know, we already expect out of this technology. And that's the crazy part. If you and I went back a year ago and was show and I told you you could do this, I'd be like, you're kidding, right? There's no way.
It is mind-blowing. And I wanted to maybe ask you a bit more that goes back to the name of the conference that you mentioned that you guys just had as Data IQ. And yep. That's one of the things that I love about Data IQ, that your vision and so much of what you push for is for everyday AI, is to empower everyone in an organization to be able to build and deploy AI. And and one of the reasons why I love that is that's the way to unlock the power of AI and to really transform, revolutionize the organizations with this wonderful technology. Like, it needs to be more than held in the held in by more people than kind of very technical data scientists. It needs to be in the hands of everyone.
You made a great point there, and it's when I kind of think back to kind of the open, you know, the beginning of the open source era. It was the cathedral and the bazaar, right? Cathedral, do you have a lot of, you know, priests who bless this stuff? And absolutely, you need, you know, you need people that understand this technology in a way so it can be governed and deployed appropriately. But we at Dataiku, and I think this is where why we get along so well, is we think this stuff needs to be in the hands of everyone. It can't be just in just a few folks. And I think for the most part, we're seeing that happen. And I can't, if I went back 5 years ago, you know, any of the things we're talking about, it's all code based. You know, it's sending somebody in a notebook and getting it done. Now it's making its way into the masses, and to us, that's the key. Is it becomes, it's productivity, it's delivering better outcomes. In effect, it almost becomes boring because it's just part of how we do our daily jobs. The term has been kicked around for a lot of times. You know, the quote unquote citizen data scientist got coined, I think, around 2016, 2017. I really don't like that term because, in effect, I see analytics and data science continues to push down in the stack of individuals. We're continuing to enable more and more of those individuals. Yes, do we need to make sure that they're, you know, people don't make mistakes and they know what they're doing? Sure, there's guardrails that you put on, but those can be put into place over time. You know, there's nothing crazy about a lot of what's happening. Yes, there's some interesting math behind it, but I can sit down a lot of times and help people understand. If you have a basic idea around statistics, guess what? AI, you know, it's a lot of statistics, it's a lot of math, but a lot of it is intuitive if you start working with it. So, you know, citizen data scientists, no. They're just data analysts now. You know, that's your normal analyst. Your normal analyst is learning Python. They start to, you know, they know how I can put a logistic regression or a regression against something. They may even start to understand random forest, right? But that's the level of technology. Technology is just going to make it easier, faster, and cheaper for all of us. And that's a big win. You know, we can go do more interesting stuff in the meantime.
Exactly. It's a huge win. And it's going to come across sort of every application and every type of technology that we use, every problem. So that's amazing. And I also wanted to ask you, and what could people find on the Dataiku website when it comes to generative AI or ways that they can start to think about this, start to implement? What are some of the things that people could find there?
Oh, absolutely. So dataiku.com. DATAIKU, think data, which is, has a lot of can be very messy, and haiku, which creates is succinct and concise and brings meaning to everything. So Dataiku. On the site, you'll find a lot of information around generative AIs. We started a bootcamp series. There's 4 sessions out there. You know, we have videos discussing different aspects of that, bringing in interesting speakers like Stephen Coe, talking about a lot of large language models he's doing, a number of use cases. So on the site right now, we have 16 different use cases to help you kind of call it a wet the palate, right? So get you to help think about these different ways you might apply LLMs. In addition to that, we're talking about the different elements of what are the different, you know, levels of all of these LLMs. Where are you starting with? So classification, then prompt engineering, and then we start talking about things like RAG, and then ultimately fine tuning and embedding. These are all terminology. If you want to be on the forefront right now, or at least start to catch a lot of this stuff, you should be learning a lot. And you know, and it's not just at Dataiku. great stuff on places like Medium is fantastic. Towards Data Science is one of their newsletters, magazines inside of Medium. I take a great deal of pride in reading just about every day. In addition, we start thinking about, you know, how you might start to deploy this stuff. And again, it's not just us at DataIQ. Most vendors out there are starting with it. So take us all with a grain of salt, but you're going to get a bit, if you start looking at kind of all of the different documentation out there, you're going to get a pretty good idea of what's going on and what's happening so that you can make an informed set of decisions to take you further. Yeah. Again, you're not the keys for me right now. This is incredibly exciting stuff. Like some of the most exciting stuff I've seen in the last, you know, decade. Right. Yeah. Second, you're not alone. If you're thinking, man, it's all crazy. I don't know what to do yet. Right. It's okay. There's lots of time in this case, this stuff. I mean, even the models themselves change, you know, pretty much on a monthly basis. So when I started talking about this, Titan was one of the big ones they were talking about. Then we started to Llama 2. Then others came along. So again, Mosaic is in the, so again, don't focus so much on trying to chase the technology, chase what, how you're going to find the use cases inside of your organization to make this work, because the organizational change that will come from large language models over the next 2 years will be far outweigh any of the technical hurdles associated with it.
So true. So true. And I really liked also your point that generative AI, or not all the problems are going to be suitable for generative AI. Supervised learning is still adding a little value, and having the two and capabilities within the organization is really going to help explode the
And again, that's your listener's job, right? Is try to understand where are the use cases apply to LLMs versus what applies to those machine learning models, because you're going to get more opportunities for those ML models now that people are starting to fish. You know, now that you have a CEO that understands LLMs or at least what they do, guess what? You've now created yourself, and we're seeing, you know, a little hint for all of you that are looking for funds, because we're all looking for money. These days, when purse strings are tight, use this capability to, you know, not only experiment, but push the rest of your agenda. LLMs with other machine learning, with other data projects, you know, it's GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. So if you're, you know, if you're trying to think about how do I put together a program, this is and I've seen this in a couple of organizations already, they're using LLMs to help promote the rest of the strategy itself. And that's just good, you know, just good business sense.
I love it. I love it. Right. I think that is a excellent note to end on. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, taking the time to walk us through this amazing field, all of the developments, the use cases that you're seeing, how people can identify them, and the fact that we have to think about productionizing these and that people are not alone. I think all amazing takeaways. Brad, a pleasure as always, mate.
Thank you. Always a pleasure, Felipe. Love to talk to you. Thanks so much. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for watching this video all the way to the end. I hope that you got a lot out of this discussion. And if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe to the channel so more people can find out about the challenges that leaders have in the analytics and AI space, and that's what we're trying to share in Data Futurology. So please like and subscribe, and if you enjoyed today's episode, please tell your friends. Thank you so much.